The dawn was a lemon and orange glow in the eastern sky before Bin Shibam had gathered together a punitive party of his desert warriors, and they were all mounted and ready to ride. They swept down the causeway from the camp to where Mansur had seen the fugitives disappear. The ground was sun-baked and stony and held no tracks of the camels passing, but they could not afford further time for the skilled huntsmen to search every inch. With Mansur leading, they followed the direction in which Kadam had headed into the wilderness. Within 2 hours' ride, they saw the dunes rising ahead of them in flowing and fantastic shapes. The slip faces down which the sand cascaded were blue and purple and amethyst in the early light. The crests were sharp and sinuous as the back of a gigantic iguana. Here they found the tracks of two camels trodden into deep sources in the liquid sand where they had climbed the first dune and disappeared over the crest. They tried to follow, but the horses sank over their hocks with each pace, and in the end even Dorian had to admit that they were defeated. "Enough, Bin Shibam," he told the grizzled old warrior. "We cannot go on. Wait for me here." Dorian would not allow even Mansur to accompany him as he rode up the face of the next dune. His tired horse had to lunge upwards with each pace and only reached the crest with great effort. There he dismounted. From the sand valley below, Mansur watched his father. He was a tall, lonely figure, staring out into the desert with the early morning breeze blowing his robes out behind him. He stood like that for a long time, then sank to his knees in prayer. Mansur knew he was praying for Yasmini, and his own sorrow for the loss of his mother welled up almost to suffocate him. At last Dorian remounted and came down the dune with his stallion sliding in the soft running sands, on braced haunches and stiff front legs. He said not a word as he passed them, and rode on with his chin sunk on his chest. They fell in behind him, and he led them back to Iskandarabad. Dorian dismounted in the horse lines, and the grooms took his stallion. He strode to Sir Guy's tent with Mansur close behind him. His intention was to confront his half-brother and disclose his true identity, to throw in his face the ancient memories of his vicious treatment of Tom, Sarah, and himself as a child, and to demand from him a full explanation of the nocturnal and clandestine presence of Kadam ibn Abu Bakr in the camp. Before he reached the tent, he realized that things had changed during their absence. A party of strangers was gathered before the entrance. They all wore seafaring dress and were heavily armed. At their head was Captain William Cornish of the Arcturus. Dorian was so angry that he almost hailed him in English. With an effort, he prevented his anger boiling over, but it simmered dangerously close to the surface. Mansur followed close behind him as he stormed into the tent. Sir Guy and Verity stood in the centre of the room. They were in riding garb and were deep in conversation. Both of them looked up, startled at the precipitate entrance of the two grim-faced figures. "Ask them what they want," Guy said to his daughter. "Make them understand that this behaviour is insulting." "My father welcomes you. He hopes nothing is seriously amiss." Verity was pale and seemed distraught. Dorian made a perfunctory gesture of greeting, then glanced around the tent. The handmaidens were packing the last of Sir Guy's possessions. "You are leaving?" "My father has received tidings of the gravest import. He must return to the Arcturus and sail at once. He asks me to present his most sincere apologies. He tried to inform you of this change in his plans, but he was informed that you and your son had left Iskandarabad." "We were in pursuit of bandits," Dorian explained. "But we are desolate that your honoured father must leave before we have reached an accord." "My father is also put out. He asks you to accept his thanks for the generosity and hospitality you have extended to him." "Before he leaves, I'd be most grateful for his assistance. We have learned that there were dangerous bandits in the camp last night. Two men, one an Arab, the other a European, perhaps a Dutchman. Did your father speak to these men? I have had a report that they were seen leaving his tent during the night." Sir Guy smiled at the question, but the smile was on his lips only, and his eyes were cold. Verity said, "My father wishes to assure you that the two men who came to the camp last night were not bandits. They were the messengers who brought him the news that has necessitated his change of plans. They were with him for a short time only." "Does your father know these men well?" Dorian insisted. Sir Guy's reply was without obvious guile. "My father has never seen them before." "What were their names?" "They did not give their names, nor did my father ask. Their names were of no interest or importance. They were merely messengers." Nancy was watching Verity's face intently as she answered these questions. Her expression was calm, but there was a latent tension in her voice and shadows in her eyes as though dark thoughts lurked in her mind. She avoided looking at Mansa. He sensed that she was lying, perhaps for her father's sake and perhaps for her own. "May I ask His Excellency the nature of the message they brought him?" Sir Guy shook his head regretfully. Then he drew from his inner pocket a parchment packet that bore the heavily embossed royal coat of arms with the legend "Oni soit qui mal y pense," and two red wax seals. "His Excellency regrets that this is an official privileged document. Any foreign power who attempted to seize it would be committing an act of war." "Please assure His Excellency that no one is contemplating an act of war." Dorian dared press the matter no further. "I much regret His Excellency's sudden departure. I wish him a safe journey and a swift return to Oman. I hope I shall be allowed to ride in company with him upon the first mile of his journey." "My father would be greatly honoured." "I will leave you now to make your final preparations. I shall wait with the guard of honour on the perimeter of the camp." Both men bowed to each other as the caliph withdrew. As he left the tent, Verity shot a single anguished glance at Mansur. He knew that at last she was desperate to talk to him. Sir Guy and Verity, escorted by Captain Cornish and his armed seamen, rode up to where Dorian and Mansur waited beside the eastern road to escort them. Dorian had brought his anger firmly under control. They set out again in company. Although Mansur fell in beside her, Verity stayed close to her father, translating the polite but inconsequential conversation between him and Dorian. But as they topped the first rise, the wind off the sea blew into their faces, cool and refreshing. As though to adjust it, Verity loosened the scarf that held her high hat in place. She seemed to lose her grip on it, and the breeze snatched it from her head. It tumbled away down the hillside, rolling like a wheel on its stiff brim. Mansur turned his horse and raced after it. He leaned far out of the saddle and grabbed the hat from the ground without checking the stallion's speed. He turned back and handed it to Verity as she rode to meet him. She nodded her thanks, and as she replaced it on her head, she used the silk scarf to veil her face for a moment. She had contrived to separate them from the rest of the party by at least 100 paces. "We have but a moment before my father becomes suspicious. You did not come last night," she said. "I waited for you." "I could not," he replied, and he would have explained further, but she cut him off brusquely. "I have left a letter under the pedestal of the goddess." "Verity!" Sir Guy called sharply. "Come here, child. I need you to interpret." With her hat again firmly on her head, the brim tilted to a saucy angle, Verity kicked her mare forward and trotted up beside her father's horse. She did not look directly at Mansur again, not even when, with an exchange of compliments, the two bands of horsemen parted. Sir Guy went on towards Muscat, while the caliph and his escort turned back to Iskandarabad.